Welcome to the Lost Together podcast with Matt Wardlaw.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the podcast. This week, our guest is Steve Lukather of Toto. I've had the pleasure of speaking with Steve several times over the past few years, and if you've heard or read any of his interviews, you'll know that he's an extremely colorful dude. He's an early morning guy. We usually talk about 8 a.m. his time, and unlike some people who might be a bit groggy at that time of the morning, Steve is always ready to go, as you'll hear in the following conversation. Toto is back out on the road this summer, and for the first time in a long time, they're going to be playing a run of headlining dates here in the United States without an opening act, so American audiences will finally get to see the extended sets that the band has been playing mostly in Europe in recent years. They're also making a real effort to play shows in places they haven't played in a long time. One of those shows is right here in Cleveland, where they're going to be playing for the first time in more than 25 years. And that's how Steve and I ended up chatting this time around, and as usual, there were no shortage of things to talk about. We cover a lot of ground, including the band's upcoming 40th anniversary and the plans that are in place to celebrate that. As you'll hear, they're also looking to record some new music as part of that anniversary celebration, which is great news. The band released Toto 14 last year, their first album of new material in several years, and the first studio record with vocalist Joseph Williams back in the fold. I spoke with Steve at the time that that new record came out, and he was quick to praise Joseph and talk about how great it was that he had finally gotten another shot at doing a Toto record, and he said at that time, "This is really kind of Joe's record." Listening to the album, it certainly was a nice way to put a cap on the victory lap that Williams has been on since he came back to the band. If you haven't heard the album, make sure you search it out. It's well worth your time. The tour begins on August 12th in Riverside, Iowa, and runs through mid-September. Check out toto99.com for the tour dates and grab a pair of tickets. There are shows on the tour that are already selling out, and if you've never seen these guys, you don't want to be left out on this one. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Visit losttogetherpod.com for the episode archive and subscribe via RSS or iTunes there as well. Email me, losttogetherpod@gmail.com, and follow me on Twitter and Facebook at losttogetherpod. Now let's get into the interview.
Boy, it is good that the occasion that we're talking here is because after more than 25 years, Toto returns to Cleveland.
You know, isn't it scary to say that out loud?
Yeah, unbelievable.
You know, ironically, one of our first tours, we did there's a live at the Agora.
Yep.
1978, we played there. And it's funny because my son played there with somebody, I don't know, like 2 years ago, or actually about a year ago.
Oh, really?
He's on the road with one of these MTV guys and playing guitar. But he played on the same stage. It was pretty funny. But, yeah, man, coming to Cleveland, you know? This is exciting. According to ticket sales, it's going very well. So,
yeah.
You know, we're going to bring a kick out. We're finally going to come show Cleveland what we got, you know?
Well, I got to tell you, I'm glad you mentioned that Agora show because, I mean, that is something that, like, I've had a video of that for quite a while, and it's amazing looking at you guys on your first tour.
Dude, I was 20 years old, man.
And just what an unbelievable unit you guys were at that time already.
Yeah, it was good fun, man. We were having the time of our life. And, you know, a lot of the Page, Steve Picaro, Lenny Castro, and myself will be returning from that particular incarnation, you know, the ones of us that are left, you know.
What sort of memories do you have from playing Cleveland over the years?
Well, I was there a couple of years ago with Ringo. That was fun.
Yeah.
I forgot where we played. You know, Cleveland is a magical place, you know. I played there with Bob Skaggs in 1977 on our first tour. My first tour with him.
Yeah.
So I remember playing there was a big deal. It was all the Sony Cleveland people there. I think we played a baseball game there with them. It's pretty, good times in Cleveland, you know. It's really a mess that we haven't played there in 25 years. You know, it's crazy.
Well, and I know that that's been part of this year's touring is that you guys made a concerted effort to go some places that you haven't been.
Yeah, well, we're in New York City, we're in Nashville, and all these gigs, like, you know, went on sale and just tickets are flying. So, like, we're really like, wow, I think it helped that we got ourselves on TV this summer on Palladium and VH1 and all that stuff, playing our 35th anniversary show from Poland, you know, and I think that brought some awareness, new album was out, got a lot of press. You know, I think maybe a lot of the bands that go out every year in various configurations, like there's like 10 bands that always intertwine and play, and we're not one of those bands, and so we're like this classic rock band out of left field. They're going, hey, these guys are pretty good. Let's go see them. You know, it's a road less traveled, if you will.
Well, yeah, and you hit it right on the head. Going to see a Toto show still feels special because you guys aren't out there every summer. And it's been really cool to see the band reestablish what feels like a solid footprint here in the United States because, I mean, this is the third summer in a row, I think, that you guys are touring the States.
Well, here's what happened. I mean, you know, we took over managing ourselves. We have an incredible agency over at WME, and we restarted the whole thing. A lot of people told us no, no, no. And then when we took the ball in back in our own hands, it became yes, yes, yes. So it's really amazing what you can do. The old cliche, if you want something done right, you do it yourself, really holds true. So I sort of took over that aspect with a staff of great people. And we made this thing happen because I wasn't going to take no for answer. Here we are selling out arenas around the world and we got nothing in the United States. I refuse to believe it. I said, well, we're going to do this if it kills me. It's the last mountain I want to climb with this band is to reestablish ourselves as an American band, you know? We grew up in North Hollywood, you know? We're not just throwing together studio guys. Somebody started that rumor. But we went to high school together. We grew up together, and we've lost a few brothers along the way, and our passion for the music is sort of intensified in their memory of Jeff and Mike McCarlin. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They want us to do this, you know? And, you know, people said it couldn't be done, people being ex-management or whatever, you know, record company, lack of that sort of support. And now we're coming up on a 40th anniversary, and I renegotiated the whole thing with our original record company, Sony, which is all new people. So there's a lot of things. It's the old story. If you hang in there long enough, you know. I remember having a long conversation with Don Henley, man. We were working on his first solo album in 1980. I'm going, Don, what the fuck is it, man? Why do these people talk? Why does everybody hate us in the media? He goes, well, they hated us too, and they hated Led Zeppelin. He goes, if you hang in there long enough, take your punches, eventually they'll come around. And I sort of, I balked at that in 1980, but here we are, what was it, 36 years later. And I said, and he was right. Man, we hung in there, man. We've taken our punches, and we've survived just about everything that there is. And since we were never really in style, we can't be out of style, we're a great underground band.
I like that. And I know a lot
as it turned out, you know, they try to bunch us in with all these like sort of bands. You know, they like to put everybody in a lump group of people, and we never really fit there.
Yeah.
Because of our pedigree, because of the background. I mean, there's not another band in history that's done what we've done, even though we're largely ignored by the mainstream press. You know, I mean, here's a band that collectively all the people that have ever been in it and that are still in it is about 5,000 albums without exaggeration.
Yeah. Oh, crazy.
And every style of music from rock and roll to Michael Jackson Thriller to Miles Davis to Alice Cooper, Cheap Trick, and whatever else pop songs you can think of, you know. We've kind of done it all. If you look at this collective discography of everybody, no one else has done that, and we still manage to sell 40 million albums running uphill. So, I mean, like to say that we haven't paid our dues is some serious bullshit.
Well,
we're back here to enjoy it. We're really enjoying this, like interest in our band, you know, because right now the only people that really matter is the people that follow you on, I hate to say it, but the people that follow you on Facebook, you know. Those are the ones whose opinions you listen to. You don't listen to somebody who you know doesn't like you, you know.
Yeah. No, for sure. You know,
and everybody has a right to their opinion. That's fine. You know, I can dig that. But they tried to kill us and they couldn't, you know?
Well, you talked about all the records that you guys have played on individually. And I talked to Steve Porcaro yesterday about his solo record. And that was one thing that he was kind of marveling at was, you know, the amount of stuff that you guys put out. And then it's like you would come home and he mentioned you and Jeff specifically. And you guys would just play on a lot of records. And then you would do more Toto stuff and go back out on the road. The only other guy that I can really think of that kind of did that in a sense, is what Todd Rundgren did with all the records that he made and then all the records
sure,
that he produced.
Todd's a dear friend of mine. We've been in the Ringo band for 4 years. We've been with him in a week.
Yeah.
I love Todd. He's a hero of mine. He's also become a very great friend. And there's a guy with work ethic. You know, it's all about work ethic and not taking no for an answer. They said, you can't make a record in your house. Well, Todd was the first guy that ever did that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Todd is the kind of person, when you say no to it, it only makes me want to do it that much more, you know? And I've really learned from hanging out with him. He's an amazing inspiration, one of the smartest people I've ever known. And we have a blast, and I love his music. You know, he's written some of my favorite all-time songs, you know. And like I said, I always learn from the people I work with. I mean, producers, engineers, artists of all styles of music. I always keep my ears and my eyes and my ears open. And it's really come to help me later in my career, especially now that I've sort of taken over somewhat of the leadership of the band. I mean, we all throw the ball around, but I'm up at 7 o'clock in the morning burning houses down to make sure the shit's done right, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, I mean, really, I mean, I'm having as much fun as I was when I was 20 years old, man. I got to tell you, I really enjoy doing this. I love my life. I wake up in the morning. I practice my guitar. I do a lot of business. There's a lot of overseas business, so but the time difference being up early is really a help. Plus, I have two little kids. I got a second generation of children. I'm getting off of school. So.
Yep. Yeah.
So I'm doing it all, man. You know, and I have a lot of energy to do it, and I'm having fun. And you know that. And plus, this time we're not going out with anybody else. This is going to be an evening list. We're going to do like 2 hours and play all the deep cut stuff that the fans want to hear. You know. It's not just like, well, you got, you know, an hour or 75, 90 minutes to go play the hits and get off, you know?
Well, and I know a lot of folks
obviously, you know, we got to play the songs people have grown up with, and that's not a problem. But we get to play some new stuff and some of the deep cuts, and we get to stretch out and play a little bit more. It's a little bit more relaxed because nobody's looking at their watch. So, and the production-wise, sound and lights and all stuff will be pretty nice, you know?
Well, and that's something that really only the folks in Europe have been privy to in the past few years. So I know folks are really stoked they're going to get to see that full set this time around.
Yeah, man, it's going to be our night, you know, so that's really fun. There's no opening act. It's just us, man. Come on out and be there. So come out and see us, man. We're really excited about it.
I saw the show this last summer in Chicago, and I wondered if you guys, have you guys been woodshedding anything fun for the set list this summer?
Well, obviously, you know, we're going to play more, you know, a lot since that was a limited set list for time. We're going to open it up and spread it out and play a lot more stuff that you might want to hear, the deeper cuts, and like I said, hold on, say okay darling with my 8-year-old needing to get announcing to me that she needs to take a shower. Okay, good.
Yeah, go for it.
I mean, we're doing the full 2-hour plus set, so you're going to get the Euro set pretty much, you know, so it's just the one that we've been working on.
Oh, that's great. And then you guys have Lee Sklar on bass stepping back in as David
steps off
the road.
Yes, we did. Lee came back. Well, it was great having Dave Hungate back for a while, our original bass player. But, you know, we dug him out of retirement. You know, he was like, you know, he's much older than us. And he wanted, you know, he was going to come out for one leg. And we thought that he probably kept him around for a year. And we beat him up a little bit. And he's like, I love you guys. I just can't do the road like you guys do. Because we're still out doing it. Like, I did, between me and myself, I did like 220 days on the road last year between Ringo, me, and some other projects I was doing.
Yeah.
With Toto and Ringo, me, you know, and Denson, like I said, some other stuff I was doing. So I'm a road dog. It doesn't bother me at all. I've always lived this life, and I seem to thrive in it for some reason. Some people hate the road. I never understood that. I mean, why be in a job that you hate?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we're about a year past the release of the latest Toto record, and I wonder kind of what your thoughts are on that record now that you've got some added distance from the experience of making it.
Wow, man. Yeah, it's a little double-edged sword. Yeah, we're real proud of the music that we made on the record. I mean, we worked very hard on this. I mean, in 9 months in the studio, you know, it was it's sometimes very stressful because, you know, we're all... You put five bulls in a room and one cow, you know?
Right.
Cow being the recording device. You know, we're about solo artists in our own right. You know, we hadn't made a record together, that configuration, since 1987. So I mean, as much as we are childhood friends, you know, it's been a while since you threw us in a room. So we worked real hard, and some of that creative tension turned out to be very positive. Now, the downside of that is we had a record company that didn't know what to do with it, and I've had a real big problem with this Italian guy, and I can't really say too much more. He, you know, it's really hard to do business with an insane person, and there was a lot of litigation involved in how this whole thing came about.
Yeah.
But, you know, we made good music, and the people that dig our music went out and bought it, and it was a success in spite of a negative experience with the record company. But like I said, we're going back to Sony Records, and we're going to make some new music for our 40th anniversary in some configuration. I don't think we're going to do a full album. I don't know how that lives anymore as far as taking the time and money it takes to do get that back. You know, at the end of the day, living in a world where streaming is the primary source of where music is heard, listened to, and or bought. Is it bought? I don't even know if it's bought.
Mm-hmm.
I've just come to find out, though, through my travels, that Spotify owes us a lot of money. So. I'm going to go get that. You know, it's a new world now. We've got to change with the world. It is a real new world. I mean, the old school way of doing things doesn't work anymore. But I'm still a strong believer in hard work and getting out there and playing for people. I mean, that's the best way to sell yourself.
Absolutely.
I mean, nobody's coming out to see how my ass looks in the jeans, you know what I mean? Although it does, I'm told it still looks pretty good, you know, for an old guy.
Yeah, well, Cleveland folks can judge that for themselves in August, for sure.
Well, you know, we do have a good sense of humor about all of it. I mean, one has to after all this time, otherwise you just end up killing yourself, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you and I had talked about the new record, and at that time you kind of, you know, talked about the legal situation and how you guys just decided to make, you know, lemonade out of the lemons and make a record. And boy, you know what? I mean, the record you guys came away with, like, what a record and what a cool thing to really put a exclamation point on what you guys have done with Joseph coming back into the band in the past few years.
Yeah, you're very kind. Well, thanks. You know, Joseph has really been a huge Joseph and Steve coming back were just a huge asset to the band. I mean, Steve's touches were sorely missed. I mean, he does so much subtle stuff that just really makes the sound of the band like the way it originally sounded with the two keyboard thing, you know. And Joseph's voice is better than it ever was, so. And he's a childhood friend, too. So I'm looking around the stage at guys that I grew up with since I was, like, you know, 15 years old. And that makes a difference, especially a bunch of guys that have been through all that we've been through together, the good, bad, and the ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And to still have the desire and passion to do this, you know. Some guys go on the road, they don't like each other or whatever. They're just doing it for a check or whatever. You know, it's just fine, I guess. You know, everybody's going to make a living, but there's more to it than this, because we can all do other stuff for money, if that's what's the case. There's still something drawing us back to this band, you know? There's still something left to say, otherwise we would have bagged it. You know, when Mike got sick before he passed, that brought us back together again for the right reasons. You know, we're helping a brother out.
Yeah.
And within that, we rediscovered, first off, the fact that we've been lifelong brothers, and through that intense sadness, it brought us closer together and made us realize, you know what? There's not too many people in the world that, A, get a second chance at this thing, B, still have a career after all these years, that we could actually go out and do. So we did a tour. It was so successful and so much fun. We said, we gave Mikey and the family some money, and we said, you want to do this next year, man, for fun, you know, again? And everyone's like, yeah, yeah. And then it developed into this thing. We were doing it every year, and then the 35th anniversary, we decided to do a DVD to commemorate that. And then we found out our first manager had signed something that we didn't know about, that if we did a live DVD, we owed this Italian guy a full studio record, or we couldn't put out the live DVD. Now, we were trying to figure out how that happened. That was just bad management.
Yeah.
And we started getting into some litigation, and it got really expensive. And our lawyers go, look, man, this guy's going to pay you a fortune to do a record. Do the record. So we ended up doing it like that. So what started out to be a little negative situation, we said, you know, if we're going to do this, we got to make a really good record. So, you know, for the people that care, we can't just, like, throw a blues record together, get a check, and tell everyone to fuck off. That would be pretty lame, you know?
Right, right.
So we owed it to ourselves to see if we still have a good one left in us, and we threw down, you know, and we spent a lot of hours in a little room together regrouping and figuring out how we wanted to do this, and what you got was Total 14, which was, to me, is one of something I'm very proud of. I wasn't sure it was going to happen again. It was also great because Joseph got another chance at the wheel, you know, and he certainly deserved that and proved that, and we all had a blast, and here we are. You know, going into our seventh year of doing this when we thought it was done, and we're going to see the 40th anniversary and beyond, I think.
Well, totally awesome stuff. And since you've mentioned the 40th anniversary, you've, you know, talked about, like, doing some stuff with, you know, the original record label, and I kind of wonder what the scope of that was and if there's a chance for, like, expanded reissues.
Yes, we're going to go back and take the raw, un-EQ'd masters and sit with Elliot Shiner, genius engineer. You know, we did all the Steely Dan stuff. He worked with us on a bunch of stuff. He mastered, you know.
Nice.
So we're going to get in there and remaster the first, particularly the first three records that really need the most help. Go through everything else. We're going to make a coffee table book, not unlike Led Zeppelin's book where they had a page, like a brief little bio for every record with some pictures and stuff, and bundle this all into the. We're going to repackage our. We're going to take all these 10,000 weird best of records and take them off the market. Then we're going to put, we had our first one, which is called Past to Present.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take off some stuff from that record and put four new tracks on and reconfigure that and remaster all that. And then we're going to go on a two-year world tour, film that with a huge production that we're going to put together this time, because you can do a lot of crazy stuff for less bread these days. We're configuring a whole bunch of things. I'm in the middle of an autobiography that'll be out right then.
Yeah.
And Steve Picaro's got a new album, and there's all kinds of stuff going on that's all going to tie into one big 40th anniversary celebration.
How much stuff is there in the vaults from the records that got left on the shelf along
the way? I get asked this a lot, and the truth of the matter is most of the good shit came out on a record called Toto 20.
Yeah, right.
Back 15 years ago plus, you know, God, is it, God, really? God, I'm trying to, my timeline gets fucked up sometimes. I'm like, has it really been that long?
It's crazy.
We put most of the good stuff in the can there. There may be one or two things. So me, David, and Steve Picaro are going to go back to New York. Now that we've rekindled a positive relationship with our original record company, Sony, they want to do something cool, and they've given us, as they owned us forever, because that's the way you sign record deals in 1977.
Right.
They want to give us, so they have all the tapes, all the stuff that we did, and there may be one or two little bits and pieces that are unfinished that we could pull out and go, let's finish that. And maybe with Jeff and Mike and all the rest of it, we may find a couple of gems. The stuff that we had that was finished came out on Toto 20. So if we dig something out, plus I think it's important that we write a couple of new pieces as well.
For sure.
But there may be a gem or two in there that we find that we can polish off and finish. That there are some great tracks that never got lyrics done or a melody or something like that. Or we got like about three quarters of the way there and canned the tune for whatever reason. There's a couple off Toto 4. There may be one off of Isolation that I wrote that was a interesting little piece. Like, we just got to find some of this stuff and then throw it up, transfer it to digital and see what we got. And we're going to do that. And the Sony people, all the people that hated us there for all those years, they're all gone or dead. They actually came to us. They came to New York last summer when we were playing there at Barclays Center, and they brought us this plaque for 40 million records sold. And I'm like, we started looking at each other going, do we really sell that many records?
Right.
They said, yeah, you did. And my first thing out of my mouth is like, well, where's all the money, man? And they kind of looked at me sheepishly, and one guy goes, well, some of the accounting in the 80s was a little creative. And I'm like, really? Yeah. And of course, the people that brought the record weren't even alive in the 80s, I don't think.
Yeah.
The 80s were a great decade. They tell me I had a great time. What can I tell you?
Yeah. Musically, have you been writing yourself? Have you been writing any stuff?
Sure, man. Actually, I've written two songs with Ringo Starr for his new album, which was really a lot of fun to do. Just me and Ringo sitting in a room. I got the, I'm like sitting there, and he's become a dear friend of mine the last, I just adore this man, I mean, as a human being, forget the fact that he was in the Beatles, the reason why I play music in the first place, but, we're friends and neighbors and stuff at this point, pretty much. I mean, he lives in Beverly Hills. I just live up the canyon, up in Laurel Canyon, And he's got a studio, his pad, and we've been writing a couple of great things, man. We got two killers, We're basically just me and him. I'm playing everything, and he's playing drums, and he's singing, writing words and stuff together. It's really been a thrill for me.
Was that
because it's good stuff and it's really fun, and him playing drums, just me and him. Because when we do the band, it's double drums with Greg Bissonette, who's brilliant.
Yeah.
But to get one on one with him, it's like, no, the way he plays, all of a sudden you hear this drum part, you go like, Jesus God, that's Ringo, for fuck's sake. You don't have to go like, hey, give me a fill like Ringo would do. It's like, he did that. It's Ringo. And he's smiling at me when he's doing it. It's like, oh, I know what you want to hear. It's not unlike when we worked with Miles Davis. And he came down and played with us on the Fahrenheit record. We had David and I had this song called Don't Stop Me Now. And, we sheepishly played it for him. And he was like looking at me and Dave. He goes, oh, you like me to play that old shit, huh? and he gave it to us, He gave us the sketches of Spaceship with the Harmon mute and everything. Like, we were dying in the studio. When you get to work with legends like that, it's very like pinch me moments,
Well,
I'm still, for 40 years in the game, I'm still like, I'm humbled to be around greatness,
Oh, for sure.
Honored to be there.
And I was going to ask about, you used the exact words I was going to use, which was pinch me moment, but I was going to ask about landing a co-write on that most recent Ringo record, Postcards from Paradise. Are those the two?
Yeah, that was fun. Well, there's a couple of tunes. One we wrote as a band, which was killer. We were just, everybody kind of brought in little pieces. You know, so here you are with Todd and Richard Page and Greg Raleigh, who really kind of started the ball with when Greg had the original riff.
Yeah.
And he's become a dear friend of mine, too. And here's a guy that played at Woodstock. You know,
oh, yeah.
I'm really happy for the new Santana thing because, you know, Neil's an old friend and Carlos, and I got a chance to work with him once a long time ago. And it's just, you know, somebody told me the classic rock is outselling new music.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
You know, because you know what's happening with us is the only way I can figure out that we're consistently selling records. I mean, I got the streaming numbers from Spotify because I have a little friend. I have a friend of mine who works there, and I got a whole thing. I can't tell you too much more than except we have 250 million streams for Toto.
Oof, wow!
Hard to believe, right?
Yeah, hard to believe.
You know, people don't think, you know, and people don't realize that, like, our band still is a little, very quietly being successful. And, you know, a band like this song, Africa, has, like, a resurgence every, like, year. It's very strange. In some of the most bizarre places. I mean, I could just be sitting there watching some of my favorite cartoon shows, like, you know, Family Guy or American Dad, and there we are. It's like... They license it from Sony, and then it's a surprise to us. And we're supposed to get paid somehow, but you have to audit for that shit. All of a sudden we become part of like, what is this, Dax Shepard and Kristen Bell did this video of their honeymoon in Africa. And, of course, anytime somebody mentions the word Africa, they play our song.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, and it bit us in the ass when Nelson Mandela died, God bless his soul. We have nothing to do with this, understand. Not a fucking thing. Somebody at CBS News put our song on. There was a huge backlash. Those motherfuckers aren't from Africa. Fuck those white assholes from North Hollywood. You know? And David Page, who wrote the thing, wrote back, goes, whoa, guys, no one even asked us, okay? It's not our fault. We're not the voice of Africa. They should have played traditional South African music. What do you want me to say, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
On the other hand, this thing, you know, it just went number one in New Zealand a year ago after 35 years. So this thing has a life of its own for reasons I will never understand. I was the guy saying, if this song is a hit, I'll run naked down Hollywood Boulevard. I said that in 1982, 81 when we cut. It was the last song we cut. I said, I love the track, but the lyrics, Dave, we're from North Hollywood. What the fuck do you know about Africa?
Yeah. Yeah,
and him and Jeff wrote this fantasy song lyrically, and we cut the track, and it's the oddball song of our sound overall catalog, but it's one that certainly is we have to take our hat off to and go, wow, you know, it's every year some kids find out, and then they press a button and go, wow, these guys got 15 albums out, and they fucking buy them.
Yeah.
So, according to Spotify, who can tell you what your audience is, we have 30% women, which is odd for a classic rock band, and most of them are under 35.
Wow.
How's that for a trip?
That's a real
trip.
When
you get stats like that, I'm going like, really? Really? Where is it? And they can say, well, you know, you're more popular in London than you are in L.A., and here's why. And I'm sitting there watching 70,000 people are listening to Africa right now today. I had the guy here at my house with a computer. Blowing my mind. I got pie charts. I got all kinds of shit. Top 20 of our hits, you know, how many times, you know, Jesus Christ, you know, Africa's got 100 million hits just by itself.
Well, here's a question.
And a lot of our other songs, you know, all the classic ones that you hear on the radio.
Yeah.
We still got some legs left. So, I guess that's what's happening now. You know, I mean, to the younger generation who doesn't care about what 75-year-old man in a Ramones t-shirt thinks. What can I say? We're still here. They tried to kill us, and they couldn't.
Well, here's a question about related to Africa. I spoke to Jason Isbell earlier this week, and having seen you guys exchanging tweets recently about the scent sound on Africa, I asked him about you. I asked him about you.
That's funny, because what the fuck? I don't know the guy, but, you know, I'm always, like, I'm on Twitter. I'm, like, the social media guy, right?
Yeah, right.
So I look at this stuff, and I'm like, okay, I'm waiting for the snarky remarks, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
He ended up being pretty cool about it. He's like, I go, okay, I'm waiting for it. All right. Here it comes. I've heard them all. He's like, no, you misunderstood me. I'm going, well, yeah, right, sure I did.
Well, and that's what I asked him. I asked him about you, and he said some really nice things, including crediting you as one of the guys whose stuff taught him how to play rock and roll guitar. And I wondered if you can...
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
That's fun. That's very sweet of him to say that. God bless him. He's a really good guitar player. Too.
I wondered if you can, you know, so he's 37 and he was telling me about growing up and listening to his dad play records, 70s rock and arena rock. And I wondered if you can hear and see the depth of your influence from the records that you've made in the music that's coming out today.
Well, I don't really see that because I don't really go looking for it, but I'm very flattered somebody like that would say that. I mean, I'm totally unaware of the shit. I'm always like living today, but you know, I played on a lot of obscure, bizarro hit records that people don't even know that I did, you know?
Yeah.
Particularly young people who don't know that even we were even session guys, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're like, are you the same guy that played on Beat It and Let's Get Physical and all the Boz stuff and all the, you know, various pop R&B stuff with the Quincy Jones and really all over the map. The kind of, if you look at our collective discography, it's, you know, three of the four Beatles, you know, ow,
yeah.
I hurt my own shoulder here.
Oh.
I mean, I've gotten to see Elton John, you know, there's a lot of really Don Henley, like I basically played on every single one of the Eagles solo records except for Joe Walsh, but I've got to play with Joe live a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm still friends with all these guys. Eddie Van Halen's my buddy. I'm going to see him to Sunday. You know, we live in the same hood, you know, a lot of the guys. But I'm really a big fan of the younger people. I just did a benefit last week with Glenn Hughes and Robin Zander and Matt Sorum and Chad Smith and Joe Perry. Jesus Christ, there's all these really great musicians. You know, the guys from The Cult, Billy from The Cult. And, you know, and Corey from Slipknot. Now, here's a guy. I would have figured, okay, Corey, the singer from Slipknot, he's not going to fucking... He walks up and goes, dude, it's so nice to meet you. I'm going, come on, man. Really? I said, you guys are insane. They're like the scariest, coolest metal band I've ever seen in my life is Slipknot, you know. And the nicest guy ever, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't always, like... And one of the funniest photos there could be, it exists somewhere, to baffle... people. It was many years ago, Tom Morello, who was a neighbor and friend of mine, we went out and we ended up at the Sunset Marquee, and Dave Matthews was there, the Scorpions were there, Twiggy Ramirez from Marilyn Manson's band was there, me, and there was this gigantic photo of all of us together that probably made Dion Winter fucking melt in half, you know what I mean? It's like, these people can never know each other.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, like, a lot of us have kids in the same school. That's how I met Joe Perry, through his first, you know, his oldest son went to school with my daughter. And I knew his ex-wife, and, you know, we just played. He's the sweetest guy ever, you know? I know Brad and Tom, and, you know, I've said hey to Steven a few times because of what mood he's in. You know, we all know each other. Anybody that's been around, like, who's got the 40-year mark or above, we all run into each other, and there's a respect there. It doesn't even matter what kind of music. You could be a bebopper, you could be a pop star, you could be a metalhead, you could be whatever you are, classic rock musician. But, you know, we all kind of wink at each other going, yep, we're still here, fucking A. Oh, that's pretty good, huh? Pretty cool. Survivors.
Yes, indeed. That's a good crown to be able to wear.
You know, I was just doing I did a seminar at WME, which is William Morris.
Mm-hmm.
The agents wanted me to come in and talk to the young agents. Going, here's a guy that started out 4 years ago. Now he's, you know, managing the band, you know, with Paige, and Paige and I are overseeing the whole thing. But I'm kind of the hands-on guy, so the mouthpiece, if you will. I went in, I had these guys on the floor laughing. But, you know, the survival aspect of things. I mean, when we're all dead and gone, all the classic rock guys, I mean, I wonder who's going to hold that torch. I mean, I guess it would be like Radiohead and Coldplay and people like that, but... beyond that, you know, we have a lot of one-hit wonder YouTube people that don't really monetize a career. So what happens then when that's all that's left?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I don't know. I mean, maybe something's going to... I think we're really due for somebody young and new to come shake it up, man. Or is that possible? Have we done anything? I mean, have we done everything that there is to do?
Well,
I mean, they said that every permutation of... Notes was done thousands of years ago by all the classical musicians. So, really, anybody suing each other over chord changes like that ridiculous Led Zeppelin suit, you know, you can't copy chord changes, man, because it's already been written way before rock musicians got a hold of it, you know?
Well, I just think it's really...
What, are you going to go back and find the guy that wrote the first 1-4-5 change and he owns every blues song?
I think it's really interesting because when you guys put Toto on the shelf, it went on the shelf. But what you're seeing and what I'm seeing is we're seeing a lot of bands that are becoming franchises and they're becoming expansion teams of the former brand. I mean, it's really interesting to see how this is progressing.
Well, it is. You know, but the thing is, some of our guys are gone.
Yeah.
Now, that's the peril of being in a classic one. You lose brothers along the way. Some tragically, you know, in our case, both were very tragic. You know, Mike, to go out with ALS is a really horrible out, man.
Yeah.
I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. I mean, you become entombed in your own body. I mean, I can't think of anything more frightening. Mike did it with dignity as much as he possibly could, man. And my respect for him and my love and respect for him will never die. And Jeff was the opposite. Hey, man, I'll see you this weekend. That night he was dead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, not sick a day in his life. 38 years old, boom, heart attack, see ya. Not because of drugs. I know people look to run with that one, man. Boy, you tell a lie enough times, it becomes the truth. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, yep.
The guy had the arteries of a... He had a bad heart. He just didn't know it. Yeah, he smoked and all that shit, but he was the least drugged-out guy in our band, you know? For him to drop like that was shocking. I'm still not over that, and that was damn near 25 years ago.
Well, and you talked recently about the DVD and Blu-ray from the Montreux Festival in 91 is going to be coming out. That had to be...
That's coming out, man,
yeah.
End of September. Boy, that was really fucking... That was hard to do.
Yeah.
In many ways. But on the other hand, I ended up laughing. I did it with Nico Bolas, was my engineer on this, and he was the second engineer on Total Four. I met him in the early, like, late 70s, early 80s. He's my age. We started out. He was dear friends with everybody in the band. I thought, you're the right guy to do this with me. And we sat in a room and we watched. There was such joy in our performance. It was, and it's loose and it's rock and it's not like slicked out. And we left all the mistakes in and everything like that because it needed to be a snapshot of that. I didn't want to like buff it out. All I did was balance the vocals, and you know there was very little tweaking at all because you know people are so hip to that now and they know, they can tell.
Yep.
So I wanted to keep it real, but that incarnation of the band was prior to the Kingdom of Desire record. It was the last tour we ever did with Jeff. It was the summer before he passed away. And you'd see Paige, Mike, Jeff, and I were kind of running. That was the quartet with background singers and a percussionist and all. But you could see us having so much fun. So to sit there and watch that, all of a sudden I get caught up. First of all, we look like we're like 20 years old. But, you know, I have, like, the silliest fucking troll doll hair you've ever seen. It's hilarious. But, you know, you get a snapshot of a moment. We're a summer tour having fun. It's so much fun. Like, a young Quincy Jones and Claude Knott, they're all there dancing with us at the end. And an insane crowd. And the energy is really intense. And it'll be a really great, fun thing for people to want to see that incarnation of the band. It was really a walk down memory lane to sit in a week and watch your younger self with brothers that are not here anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Looking healthy and happy.
Yeah.
You know, it made me miss them a lot. And there was a few tears shed. And a lot of laughter as well. A lot of memories of like, oh, fuck, remember that insane night in Montreux, blah, 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 blah.
Well, you played...
So that's coming out at the end of September. And then, you know, here we go again.
You played guitar on Stand Back by Stevie Nicks. Were you around when...
I did.
Were you around when Prince comes in to play keyboards, or did he send that in?
I met Prince back when we were doing it, when we were in 1977, before anybody knew who he was. He was working, we were, James Newton Howard, you know, film composer, he was producing records back then. And we were very close friends. He invited me to work on this record he was doing for Valerie Carter. And he was cutting some things, he asked me to come in and do an overdub, and there was this young kid there. I didn't say much, he sat in front of the console. Like, if you've been in a recording studio, okay, I'm sitting at the console, and then in front of the console, there's a couch and then the big speakers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he would sit in the front, and I'd play something, and all of a sudden, I'd just see the top of his head, his nose and his eyes, he'd just stare me down, and then slow motion, go back down. And I'm going, who the fuck is this guy? You know, and James goes, oh, this guy Prince from Minneapolis, he's supposed to be a genius or something like that. I go, really? Interesting cat. And then I was working at Sunset Sound when he was mixing Purple Rain. He had the motorcycle and he'd be sitting there in the silver LeMay suit with a bodyguard at 10 in the morning inside the studio where there's certainly nobody going to attack him at that point, you know. And he'd be like, hey, man, how's it going? I'd just get a little nod. He'd just move his head up, you know. But then he hung out with Jeff McCarr and said how much he dug the band and like he liked our music and shit. I was like, really? That's pretty cool. And last time I... saw him at all. We were doing the Curacao Jazz Festival about 3 or 4 years ago. And all these bands were there, us, the Roots. We headlined one night, and then Prince was the next night. And I was staying, I had booked this suite overlooking the ocean months in advance because I was going to take a vacation there, right? And he was pissed off that I got his suite. So it was pretty, so I was like, in the, he was underneath me in the suite. It was still nice, but not quite as nice. So, well, I was going, "Hey, man, Prince, what's up?" And like nothing would come back, you know.
Around,
you know, I love the guy's music. He's a strange man, but I didn't really know him personally, other than those two those few brief encounters. But I certainly love the music, like everybody else does.
A sad
end, man. I'm telling you, man, I've lost 33 fucking people in the last 2 years. Nick Menza was a buddy of mine. I knew him from 1990. I knew his dad, Don Menza, the sax player, worked on our records and stuff. You know, just every day I'm like, okay, I'm afraid to turn on my news feed, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this year...
33 people, friends, family, people I worked with, you know? I mean, the tragic deaths, man, of people that you just don't, your own age, are seemingly healthy and just gone. Like, Nick fucking died at the Baked Potato, this jazz club that we've been playing at, jamming at, every year since 1980 for
me.
Yeah. And he died on stage at the club right down the street from my house. I live up in the hills above it. I'm like, Nick died on stage at the Baked Potato. It's the most fucked up thing. On one hand, hell of a way to go, playing the drums, doing what I love doing, boom, you're gone. But you're not really, to die in front of an audience is pretty trippy.
Yeah.
To mention he had a family and everything like that. You just go, fuck, man. Life is so frail.
Well, I mean, this year alone, I mean, we've lost a lot of heavy hitters.
Oh.
You know, Prince, yeah, as
no,
I mentioned,
a lot of people
Bowie.
I worked with.
Yeah.
A lot of people. Except for Bowie, I worked with just about every famous person in the past.
Glenn Frey, I mean, it's really heavy watching these fellow heroes just fall away.
I know. Well, you know, it's one big family. We've all worked together. I worked on Glenn's records back in the day. You know, I worked with Natalie Cole. You know, I had my brief encounter with Prince. There's a lot of other people that passed that are just, it's jaw-dropping, you know? And you just go, wow. Is it the age that I'm at? I'm 58, going to be 59 years old this year. And I've been super healthy for the last 7 years. You know, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do anything nasty at all.
Yeah.
Certainly we all lived through the era.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, most of us got it together, you know? But even then, you never know. Like, David Page had a little health episode, you know? And I was like, Dave, you can't die on me. And it turned out to be nothing, but, every time somebody gets a cold, you're like, have you seen the doctor? You know, everybody's getting paranoid now. Look at Keith Emerson, my buddy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm doing a thing for him this weekend. Now, here's a guy. Now, I just jacked my shoulder up, ripped all the rotator cuff muscles off in a bus accident in Europe 3 months ago. I was, we were coming into town in the morning. I was walking downstairs to get a cup of coffee, a double-decker bus, right? Some idiot pulled in front of the bus. Bus slams on its brakes. I raised up my left hand to keep myself from falling down the stairs, and all my body weight ripped around to my left arm, and I tore all the fucking muscles off, and I've been in agony for 3 months.
Oh, God.
Now, I'm just getting better. I've been on pain meds, but I've been under the doctor's care and doing everything all cool, and I'm coming back. I'm just going to play the fucking guitar. That's part of my physical therapy, so the chops are up. But, I'm never going to have full strength in my left arm again. And I got like a 5-year-old kid, and an 8-year-old daughter, so it's, it's a trip, man. You know what I mean? In a blink of an eye, something could happen. You could fall and break your neck, and be paralyzed to death or die. I mean, it's like, I'm as far as I'm concerned, I'll take the shoulder before cancer,
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, man.
That's another thing. The big C is coming, making its rounds around people my age, man.
Final bit that I want to ask you, and then I want to let you run, and that just is your buddy, Eddie Van Halen. You guys get together this weekend. What happens typically when you guys get together?
Talk about life, man. We're just old friends. I met Eddie the first time when we were doing the Cal in 1978. We became really tight around 1982, and we've been friends ever since, man. We've watched our lives change, divorce, children, happiness, friendship, trends, our various personal demons exercised. And we went through a lot of shit together, and I adore the man. I mean, he's one of my favorite people. He's also certainly one of the finest rock and roll guitar players ever to pick the instrument up. And he's still my buddy Ed, man, you know? I love him to death. I'm looking for him and Al are dear friends, you know, his brother.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just think the world of him, you know? And there's, you know, those of us from that era, we can look at each other. Like when I saw Glenn Hughes and Robin Zandri, and I played on the Dream Police album. I didn't get credit on it, but I played on some of it. And we said, hey, man, I haven't seen you since, you know, 35, 40 years ago. Like, how you doing, man? And we just did this kind of like, yep, we're still standing here, man. And he's singing as good as he ever did, so I can still play. So here we are. I don't look too bad for a guy that's 58 years old that's gone through what I've been through, I can tell you.
Well, you and Eddie both have...
I think we're just all survivors, and we can laugh about things and have memories of situations that we were in, you know, many, many years ago that, you know, occasionally we'll just sit there and go, fuck, do you remember that? Oh, God, what were we thinking, you know?
There you have it, the one and only Steve Lukather. My thanks to Steve for the interview time. It's always a pleasure to talk music with him. As I said at the head of the podcast, you can visit Toto on the web at toto99.com for all of the latest tour dates and band-related news. They're also on Facebook. Steve has his own website at stevelukather.com, which has a ton of information. And he's also a lot of fun on Twitter. You'll find him at Steve Lukather. That's going to do it for this week. Join me next week for another edition of the Lost Together podcast.